Good morning, everybody in Health Chatter Land. Welcome to Health Chatter, and today's show is on addressing health in anxious times. And we decided that the Health Chatter crew decided that, all right, we're going to all chime in on this one. So all of us have some ideas and things that we could maybe do as we proceed with all the changes that are going on in healthcare. So stay tuned on that. We've got a great crew that I always introduce, and I like to recognize Maddie Levine-Wolf, Aaron Collins, DeAndra Howard, Matthew Campbell, and Sheridan Nygaard are a crew second to none. I'd put them up against any podcast crew anywhere. You guys are great. They provide great research for us, marketing, production, recording of shows, the whole nine yards. So thanks to all of you. And they've been with us a long time. So we must be doing something right because they still like us, right? So, all right. And also Clarence Jones is my co-host of the show. Clarence is great. We've been working together a long, long time. Clarence, it's a pleasure. Barry Baines, our medical advisor, he's on the show today. And thank you, Barry, for being with us. Human Partnership is our sponsor for all these shows. Great community health organization. They're doing some really creative things, and perhaps even more so, and Clarence can probably touch on this, in these anxious times. So stay tuned on that. You can check them out at humanpartnershipalliance.org, and you can check us out, healthchatterpodcast.com, for all the shows that we've recorded. We have transcripts of shows. We've got the background research on there. And oftentimes we add to that research if more information becomes available. So check us out, healthchatterpodcast.com. All right. I don't like to be anxious, but we are in anxious times. And I guess what I'd really like to do is maybe go around the horn here a little bit and ask all of us, what's kind of affecting you the most? And see if there's some commonality, and then we can go from there. So, all right. So let's first start out with my Clarence. Go ahead.
I think for me, the biggest challenge to me right now is uncertainty. And what I mean by that is that in the work that I do, a lot of times the people that I'm working with are uncertain about what they should do. You know, they're not certain about their funding. They're not certain about, what's acceptable. I mean, because it just seems like there are so many shifts and changes in, what is appropriate now. And so I'm going to leave it like that. I'm going to be very, very at 10,000 feet. And we can talk a little bit more about it later.
Okay. All right, Matthew, you're in the upper left-hand corner of the screen here. So I'll start with you.
Yeah, so I think it's helpful to kind of put in context of like where I came into public health at. You know, I started studying public health like maybe a year before COVID, then we were immediately in the COVID era. And that really brought an influx of like, money and funds. And then I went to grad school during public health, during COVID. So it was, there's this huge emphasis on public health. And like, while we can have some debate about how COVID was managed, largely, we knew we had a lot to do. There were a lot of excitement. Everyone was wanting to get into the field. How can we help? How can we, that's when we get to see public health really shine in these times of like crisis, if you will. And now we're on the other end of that. And so it's such a, it's very interesting to see that other side and see kind of where we are now of, how do we keep moving forward? And I don't know, everything, it's a tough time. And as a, a newer grad and a newer to the field, it's definitely frightening to see. It's like, are nonprofits the place to work anymore? Do you have that job security? How can we still do the good work with also maintaining, a personal level of security as well? So it's really balancing all of those things in these like difficult times.
Yeah, I get it. It's like all of a sudden there's real excitement with regards to a public health issue crisis, namely COVID. And now it's just like, all right. And again, that was, I had mentioned this before, that was not self-inflicted. Okay, that came to us. This little COVID critter affected all of us. And but yes, but yet it brought on public health response, and at the same time, some real questions on public health going forward. All right, Barry, you're on.
Yeah, thanks. I have a few a few of the concerns, and actually they some of them really do hit at a more personal level, and others are a little bit more I guess, and I'm going to join Clarence at the 10,000-foot level, even though I'm afraid of heights. But we'll see where that goes. But I think some of the things for me is the understanding that health in the United States, health in Minnesota, is really global. It's not just local. And so the things I worry about are like drug shortages, as an example. For, there are a lot of drugs where there's a shortage, not even thinking or worrying about the impact of tariffs and costs of drugs, which is another whole issue, right now, but just an actual shortage of drugs. At a more personal level, not surprisingly, being a healthcare provider or former healthcare provider, in a direct way, a lot of my contacts are in the health field. And the big anxiety for providers is not only the increased stress of burnout. I think Matthew, highlighted, like he picked the perfect time to get to get into public health just before COVID. But this is just, people have not in the health care field have not recovered yet from COVID, and this is like piling on. So I'm very worried about increased burnout within, among healthcare providers, doctors, nurses, nursing assistants, just from top to bottom. And then the other thing is that at a little bit higher level, there are so many people that are losing their jobs in these agencies, more in the public health sphere rather than direct care. That really drive the engines of innovation in our healthcare system. And so, like one example that, I chatted about before we went on air, is I have a relative who's receiving cancer treatment, and what's going on now with a lot of the funding for universities where a lot of cancer research really takes place. Like I say, this relative is probably going to be needing to go into clinical trials, and what's going on right now with the whole funding situation and sort of like targeting seems to be anything to do with health. She may not have options for clinical trials for her cancer, and that's going to directly impact not only for her in terms of prognosis, but for many people across the board in terms of mortality and morbidity. And I better stop there because I can keep going on, but I'll be quiet now. Those are just a few.
Yeah, and you know what? We all, everything that's been said so far, we all own that. So all the things that Matthew's noted, Clarence knows, Barry's noted. All right. So now let's keep going here. All right. So Sheridan, you're up.
Sure. I mean, I have a lot of big feelings, if I'm being honest. I'm graduating with my master's in the next 3 weeks here that I've been working on for a while. I lost my grandma during COVID. I was in grad school at that time, or that's what kind of inspired me to start grad school. So it's been 4 years part-time while I work full-time in research, and I do health chatter, which I love doing all these activities so much. But now I'm looking at a new stage in my life where I'm excited to start applying for jobs. There's no public health jobs out there right now. It's a hiring freeze or hiring cool in most federal agencies, in a lot of research hospitals, and a lot of research centers, in a lot of nonprofits, for profits. Everybody's struggling. Nobody knows what's going on. It's really that uncertainty that we talked about. And I'm a really driven person. I'm really excited to take on more responsibility and take on a new title, but it just doesn't seem like it's going to happen for me in this climate, which is obviously a personal concern. On a broader scale, I worry about the disintegration of the systems that support health and community and the impacts on health that that will have. And certain communities are obviously feeling this more. I'm a really big social justice advocate, and seeing human rights be violated, not only do I worry for their health, it just really hurts my heart seeing human beings not be treated like human beings. And I think that can be true for a lot of things that we're seeing happen right now. So overall, while I'm concerned about myself, my career, my professional life and my career, I think I feel more anxiety and uncertainty about our patients, our participants, and the people that we want to see healthier and happier. So I think that's all I really
We
have to
can
say.
add all of that to the list. All right, Deandra.
Yeah, so I would say just kind of jumping onto what Barry kind of said, just because I work in research, clinical research at the U. So, a lot of those, government funded studies, have been affected. And, thankfully for my team, we do a lot of business and industry. But it's just tough to see because a lot of those government-funded studies, are directly related to things that are really affecting public health and people today, like a lot of cancer studies and just a lot of studies that need a lot of funding. And, so for me, it's just kind of tough to see that because for me, I'm in a lot of business and industry studies, but I feel like we need that balance of, business and industry is great. I think they do a lot of great studies. There's a lot of things that they've done to kind of further public health research in a lot of different areas. But a lot of this government funded research is really directly related to, diseases and diagnoses that people are dealing with every single day. And that is like more directly related to the public population.
So, all right. So, I realize that there's personal aspects to what we're talking about here. There's professional aspects. There's community aspects, research aspects, etc. I want to hear from Aaron. So, Aaron, what we're doing here is, we're going through and everybody's kind of listing out in there for the show what's concerning you as it relates to health and what's going on in today's environment.
I think the first thing I think about is professional for me. I worry about the people that we serve at our FQHC that without us otherwise don't get the care or resources that they need. I think about people who sleep outside, who maybe are dependent on substances and will not have the resources they need to live a safe life without this FQHC. And I worry with some of the cuts that have happened and are continuing to happen, and people are saying are going to happen, will take those resources away. I know my organization has already been affected by some of the grant cuts, one being the traditional health program. So a lot of the funding that funds the cultural th things that we do at the clinic are no longer. They lost a few positions in that department. And then the maternal and child health program is also no longer. So anybody who is employed under the maternal child health grants that were given to the state by the federal government, and then the state obviously had to cease those programs. We don't have a maternal child health program anymore. We don't have an OB case manager anymore. And so the 27 women that are pregnant at our clinic are going to see a disruption in their continuity of care and their care coordination and like the overall satisfaction of the care that they're getting because we don't have those positions anymore. And the money is just gone. It's not any notice, hey, your money's going to go away May 1st. No, it's gone effective today. There's nothing we can do about it. And I think that's the jarring aspect of it is that it's gone now and you're not going to get it back and you have no way to prepare for tomorrow.
All right. Let me add a couple things here. What has struck me over the last, 3 months is the immediacy and the processes that have gone on. And it appears as though decisions are literally based on saving a dollar here, saving a dollar there, okay, without realizing the overall implications for health. I've often said that if you don't have your health, we don't have anything, and this is true for everybody. I don't care what whether you're Democrat, Republican, Independent, doesn't matter. When you're sick, or there's something that's going on in your community, or there's an outbreak, it's like we depend on certain things in order to assure our health, and that's being compromised. And it's one thing if it's compromised, it's another thing if we realize after the fact that, oh my God, what did we do? And it's not so easy to get these things back up and running again. So that's kind of a major concern.
Stan, I want to say something real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
I know that you said that it's around saving dollars. I think what I sense, and this is from my own personal perspective, I think it's about whether people like or dislike something. I mean, it's not even about whether or
That
not
could
there's
be
been
too,
some
yeah.
research that's been done about what the effectiveness of the project is. Like, I just don't like this, so I'm in a place where I can dismantle it, and I'm going to do that. And I think that for me is the more dangerous space for all of us is that, it's now based on either you comply or you die.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that for me is, like I said, and that might sound kind of harsh, but that's how I feel. Comply or
Yeah.
die.
Yep. And here's the other thing, and maybe some of you can chime in on this. Do you think the public cares? Really cares? In other words, oh, we're saving money by doing this. Great, let's keep doing it. Okay, as opposed to truly understanding what implications this has for our health. So I just wonder whether there's enough of a level of understanding that drives people's concern that these things should be continued. Yeah, go ahead, Sheridan.
So I have a lot of folks on all sides of the aisle, across all walks of life in my life. And I can say from what I have heard from people in my life and on social media, there is a certain percentage of people that do support these indiscriminate cuts, that do think that saving a few dollars here or there is worth it in the end. But I would say a majority of the folks that I talk to in both my professional life, my school life, my personal life, my family, and on social media, I would say a majority do care and do see the value in these services, especially when we're talking about stuff like cancer research, kids research. I mean, there's a lot of people that, especially if it personally affects them or if it's something that really tugs on the heartstrings, I think we can get a lot of attention in those areas. But I think the areas that are slipping under the rugs are like LGBTQ research and things like that, that maybe not everybody agrees on or sees the value in. But when we're talking about losing kids' cancer research, people are getting fired up for sure.
Yeah, Barry.
Yeah, so I'm going to pile on a little bit with Aaron, here as well. I think part of the problem is that at one level, people don't know what they don't know, and the information they get is not very clear. And so it's very easy for that to get distorted. And so people may go down a track of supporting something, or at least tacitly supporting something, that if they had all the information in a clear way, they probably wouldn't support it. That being said, I think what's going to wind up happening is that when people start to be impacted directly by these things, that's going to be the wake-up call. And I'll use Aaron's example of, childhood cancer. When that hits, in a community, and they start to see that with their neighbors or their own family, it's like going to be, what the heck is going on here? So I think, and this is going to take time, clearly, for it to play out. The other thing is that rural America is in some ways going to be even more impacted by all these things that are going on. And at least demographically, that support for the current administration has been, a lot more in rural areas. So when that comes home to roost, then maybe people will understand that. The other one last thing is that some of the public polling that I've seen has shown that there's been significant shifts. Again, building on what Aaron said, that most people, all now are seeing this or not supporting this. And that number continues to grow week to week and month to month. And so I'll tee up because I know we're going to wind up going there during the show when we talk about, well, what people can do. Because Stan, as you said, to just be sitting on your hands and do nothing doesn't help our anxiety.
Right.
But I think the trends of what's happening is there is an awakening that's happening in the population, and that awakening has to unfold and takes time. But I think we're seeing the direction that it's going in.
One of the things that it's not just one, a lot of things that we're dealing with, but one for sure is the immediacy of the information that we get. Either through the news or social media, and you get into this reactionary state quickly. What I'd like to do for our listening audience, our research crew, put together, some of the things that have hit us so far. And it's kind of like we have to ask this question. All of us have to ask this question: what effect will this have? So, what effect will it have, given the fact that we've withdrawn from the World Health Organization? What effect will it have by eliminating DEIA? And for everybody, that's diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility programs and policies. What effect will it have? When we have to totally realign our US foreign aid, what effect will it have when our government now, through an executive order, recognizes only two sexes, male and female? What effect will it have by removing those people from any care that they might receive through the existing Affordable Care Act? Oh goodness. Funding, layoffs, what effect will that have in the immediacy of the situation? And then when we get our wits be, back to hire these people, these true professionals back, are they willing to come back into the field? University research is being compromised, et cetera, et cetera. So these are there's probably more on this list. In today's paper, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, but it also hit the national scene as well, that there is going to be a $40 billion cut in health and human services. Now, this includes a variety of different things, but one of the agencies that's really going to be hit is the Centers for Disease Control, where many, many programs are going to be cut drastically, and in many situations eliminated. And this, by the way, includes on both sides of the equation, infectious disease and also chronic disease. So here's a major concern that I have, is our professional talent and our new and budding talent. What's going to convince people to young talent to get involved in medicine? What's going to get them involved in public health? What is it going to take to get them involved in community service? And how is it that we can help? So one of the things that we're going to be doing here in the state of Minnesota, this might land up being done in other states as well, is that those that have been in the field and who are very, very well connected with various people in the field will help mentor those people that were laid off and also new talent that are trying to land themselves into new positions in the health field. That's being coordinated here in the state of Minnesota by a former commissioner, Dr. Ed Ellinger, and that'll be happening within about the next 2 weeks. One thing that we're going to be doing, and again, this is kind of taking the hands out from underneath and trying to do something. We're hopefully going to be doing a live show, Health Chatter show, where we will be able to have audience participation, and it's not the intent of the show will not be to, list out in many ways how kind of like what we're doing here, the things that are troubling, but everybody will know what those things are, and it's like, okay, let's put out some ideas on how it is that we can proceed in these times to assure the safety and care of people at the individual level and community level. It will We have gone through tough times, and we will get through this one way or the other. It's just, I think what we're all anxious about is what will be on the other side. Clarence, thoughts?
Yeah, I think as you were talking, I think that for me, and I'm coming from a community perspective, okay? Not a clinician. For me, I am just trying to figure out what we can do. I'm trying to figure out based on relationships, based on collaboration, how do we move together? And I'm speaking from community perspective, how do we move together collectively to do what we can do? Because there's so much transition that's going on that if we look at, we look at everything, we could get kind of confused. But if we can talk about what do we specifically bring to the table, I think that that makes it a little bit easier for me to be able to figure out, what we can possibly do with whatever comes down the pipe. I don't know, but the point is I'm not going to give up. I mean, part of my work is that, I'm truly committed to making my community healthier. And so I'm gonna get in where I can fit in. And so again, I'm taking that 10,000 foot level to say like there's some things that are totally out of my control, right? But there's some other things that I can do working with people like you, working with like you said with Barry, with the other our other colleagues. There are things that we can still do based on what comes down. So I'm gonna leave it like that.
So, Clarence, I have a question for you. All right, so you're involved intimately with Human Partnership, and I'm sure as a community organization, they're dealing with this. So, how are they responding, or how are people feeling, based at Human?
I think Sam, I think we are like the rest of the population. I mean, there are struggles. I mean, we've had some of our colleagues that have been involved with the loss of funding and things like that. And we're just trying to figure out what we can do at this time. That sounds really, like I said, that sound like really pie in the sky kind of thing. But I do think that by finding out specifically what is available and being able to work with that is how I feel like we have to move ahead. I can't do everything, you know what I'm saying? And like I said, a lot of these decisions are totally out of my realm, beyond my pay grade. But I still have to figure out how do I creatively help my community to stay healthier.
So should let me just throw this out. So at CDC, chronic disease programs are going to be cut a lot, okay? And one that's near and dear to my to me is in the area of heart disease, cardiac arenas, heart and stroke. And just because we cut these programs doesn't mean that that people aren't going to suffer from heart disease and strokes. So what do you think? I mean, okay, I want to hear from the younger gang here. So what do you think? I mean, it's just like, does this trouble you at all? Or we'll just have to wait and see? Or what's your thought on that? I mean, that's just one arena. Any thoughts? Matthew, you got an idea?
Yeah, I mean, I would just say it's deeply troubling. I mean, when I think about our society as a whole, I have this like idealized view, I guess, of what we should invest in. And I understand that everyone does, but I think that like health is at that core. And so the idea that like money is just being, and not a small amount of money, right? Like this isn't like, oh, we're sunsetting a couple of programs that have not been effective. I mean, just completely yanking the rug out of so many programs and just completely upending the way public health and the way research is conducted is, yeah, it's deeply troubling. And I don't even know, similar to other people, it's like, I don't even know what you do. Like, I don't think, I have no, I'm at a loss of words of what to do. It's just kind of like writing it out, if you will.
Aaron, what do you think? Aaron there? Sheridan, chime in.
The mute button
Ah,
escapes me. I'm
gotcha.
here. I think I have to echo Matthew's sentiment. I think it is extremely troubling, stress-inducing. It is a topic of conversation every day at work. And I have to, I spoke on the professional side of things earlier, but there are personal side to these things too. I volunteer with Breakthrough T1D, an organization that is really focused on finding a cure for type 1 diabetes, which I have. And some of these cuts to the FDA and the NIH have ceased research clinical trials that were in the final phase three stages of curing people with type 1 diabetes. So like for me, knowing about these research opportunities that have stopped and will not make it to the public as quickly as they could have been is also feeling like I've been stripped of something. Like that is also just mind-boggling to me that there are clinical trials out there that have just stopped because that's what he wanted. And it's not just type 1 diabetes. There's a whole slew of other things. You shared and brought up childhood cancer research. Who wants the kids to have cancer? It's just mind-boggling that these are the things that we're choosing to just stop. And I wonder a lot of the times if advisors or people in the inner circle helping make these decisions are laying out the programs and things that are going to be affected by these choices. And my gut says probably not. But who knows? I would love to be a fly on the wall and a part of those conversations, but obviously we can't be. But it really I try to understand where they're coming from every day, and it just is upsetting.
Sheridan.
Really just echoing what everybody else said, but I'm gonna have a little raw, vulnerable moment with everybody right now. Healthcare providers have been burnt out, and we have been since COVID. It is already extremely difficult caring for people at the end of their life and giving them the best possible bedside manner that they deserve every single day. It is exhausting. Even when you are having a bad day, you cannot have a bad day for these people because they need you. And then on top of this, our industry, our field, that much of us did not go into this for money, for status. Much of us went into this because we just care about others and we just want the best for everybody in our communities. It is so hard to not see people believe in us. And if I'm being completely honest with everybody, my mental health has suffered extraordinarily. It feels like a never-ending pit with new things getting funding pulled constantly, not being able to get a job, not like being able to start a family and live the American dream because of these things is just devastating because all I did when I went into public health is want to help people like my grandma who passed away of COVID. Like it truly, we have never got a break since COVID and it just keeps going. And just to be vulnerable and raw with everybody so that it is extremely clear. Sometimes we do feel like giving up, but we don't because we care about our patients and our participants and our people.
You brought up mental health, and there's a lot of mental health issues that are rising to the top because of the anxiousness and the angst that a lot of people are feeling, and what we're seeing is that those people that have mental health issues, just in general, but then they add this on top of it. Just creates even more problems, and it begs the question, mental health professionals, they can get burned out. Funding for mental health programs can go by the wayside. So mental health is a big component of this. So here's another thing I'm going to put out there, and correct me if I'm wrong. I think most people would agree that yes, we can be more efficient in health and in a lot of the things in government. Yes, we can be more effective. But my question is, does that unilaterally mean that you cut just go to it, just cut it out because there's no reason to spend any time on assessing better avenues or quickly, I mean within a reasonable amount of time, bring professionals together to determine better ways. But I think part of the anxiousness that we're all feeling is that wasn't done, or at least not to my knowledge. Go ahead, Matthew.
Yeah, so I think this really speaks to the larger problem that we
Yep.
have is we all want immediate action right now. And that's what sells. That's what sells the headlines, that's what sells the news every single night. That's what fires up the bases on either side of the aisle, right? So it's like I can't say I'm surprised, right? Like this is what this individual, not to get too political, said he was going to do from day one, right? Like if he got elected, well, I'm going to cut, we're going to cut spending. And now we're seeing the ramifications of that. And it's like, I personally don't think I wouldn't have predicted this large of a ramification or this large of an upbringing. Like maybe I didn't truly believe it. It was kind of one of those things of like people say it, politicians say a lot of things, and then they kind of throw it back oftentimes, it feels like, to the professionals to like figure out all the details and figure out how to make their things come true. This feels like a vastly different than that. There has been no input in any way of the process, and I think that's the frustrating part for like me as a public health professional, right? Like I'm not going to sit here and say that public health has no waste or public health has no problems or, that every grant that ever come across the table is beneficial and like, but but our driving force, I will say, and I think I can speak for everyone, is that we are out here trying to do good and trying to do our best. And for someone to sit and say that we are not and that everything is wasteful, it's insulting. It's insulting to
It
the
hurts.
profession. It hurts personally and as a professional, I know that is not true. So I just wish the input of really smart leaders would have been advised if you were even going to talk about cuts.
I agree, Deandra.
Yeah, just to go like feed off of the back of Matthew, I think one of the toughest parts about being a health professional is getting people just even in your day-to-day life to understand like how long it takes for you to see progress in healthcare, in just different diagnoses, medicine. And I think I understand where you could, if you don't know, you could feel like there is that, waste. We are spending all this money, but it takes a lot of time. And I don't think people understand the time it takes just to see progress, not even to see cures and solution, just to see progress, just to get us in the right direction. And I think that can be really hard to explain to people. And I find myself explaining that to, my friends and my family, and explaining like science and research is, like a hypothesis. It's trial and error. We are going to sometimes do something and we're going to see the progress. Sometimes we're going to try something and we may not see that progress. But that gets us closer to knowing what is effective and what isn't. And it's really hard, I think, for people who are not in those spaces to understand like what that looks like and what that might look like in a dollar sign. That is millions of dollars, unfortunately. But that is what it takes to get progress in healthcare, So I think that that's a really tough part of being a health professional, is getting people to kind of come and see, what we're seeing.
Sheridan.
Kind of combining what both Matthew and Deandra brought up, research takes time and you can't set a date for certain findings. That's not how research works. And the top public health leader at HHS is saying that they will find a cause for autism by the summer and that we know that it has to be environmental because you can't have an epidemic with just genetic factors. Science does not agree with this statement. It is very clear that autism is genetic. We have a lot of research that we spent a lot of money and time on to learn this. And for the head or the leader of HHS to put a time frame on science and also just speak so openly about myths that we know are not true. It just goes back to what Matthew said, is we truly need public health leaders that are evidence-based and that will be leaders that won't take us steps backwards and won't waste our money on research that we've already done.
And if we move quickly, like in this case with autism, we're compromising quality. And and that's a major concern. So from a historical perspective, many years ago when I was first teaching a course on prevention and health promotion in the School of Public Health in
at the University of Minnesota, we were talking about vaccinations, and there was a presentation that was put together by the American Academy of Pediatrics with the actor Cliff Robertson back then. And it was the need for people to understand and get their kids vaccinated for a variety of different things. And one of the things that came out in that presentation was this, is that fortunately we don't see these disease manifestations. And for many people who don't see them, they say, well, why do we need to get vaccinated for them? If it's not, if we don't see them, well, guess what? One of the reasons why was because many, many people got vaccinated. And let's fast forward to now. Now, you know, when kids aren't getting vaccinated for measles, mumps, and rubella, let me tell you, all of a sudden we're seeing measles, and that can happen. If that's a wake up call, that can also happen with some of the other disease manifestations that we're dealing with. So becoming lackadaisical is not the answer for this. And so we have to keep our voices loud to make sure that people are properly vaccinated. All right, Clarence. Last thoughts, make it positive.
All right. Okay. I'm very positive. I am positive that working with the right kind of colleagues, we're going to figure out a way to continue to make our communities healthier in spite of all the challenges that we have. And so my thing is that I really look forward, in spite of all of the challenges, I look forward to working more closely with my colleagues to find solutions to the work that we have to do.
Yeah, don't give up. Don't give up. Barry.
I'm going to use the big R word, resiliency.
absolutely.
You know, because the positive part, and you said this earlier, the world, this country has been through difficult times before, and you do get through. It doesn't mean it's not going to be painful doing that, but we are resilient as communities, as people, as states, as cities, as a country, and it does take time. So we need both patience, and some as well trusting in ourselves and doing what we can to take care of ourselves so that we can be more resilient. And one way to do that is by staying connected.
Yeah.
Whether it be with your friends, family, neighbors, community, that does build resiliency moving forward. That's where I'm sort of putting my hope in, that we are going to remain resilient.
Thanks for that. Aaron, some thoughts, last thoughts?
This darn mute button is going to be the bane of my existence today. I think I have to echo Barry that the work we're doing is important. And at the end of the day, like Sheridan said, we care immensely about the people that we're helping, and we need to keep that in mind. I think the other side of the coin is that this is extremely upsetting for the arenas that we're sitting in. And I am sending emails and making calls to our federal representatives weekly, giving them updates on what's happening in my environment, senators and legislators. And I think that's important too. People, I think, sometimes forget that those people are serving us, and letting them know that the things that are happening right now are affecting their constituents is also really important. So if people are looking for tangible things to do, that is absolutely something that you can tangibly do to advocate for yourself and your community.
Yep, yep, yep. Deandra.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, for me, I just want to kind of focus on, doing my job and, kind of take caring, kind of what Sheridan was saying about her mental health being affected. We have to, in these hard times, like, try and take care of ourselves and, remember what we're doing is important and just, maybe take a step back sometimes if we're just kind of struggling with everything that's going on. So I think that's kind of how I'm feeling right now about everything is, wanting to continue to do my job, continue to help people, but also, sometimes taking that step back and making sure I'm okay.
Yes. So I've been sharing, Barry's got the, one word, we need to be resilient and strong. What I've been sharing, and I want to share it with our listening audience is this. Tend to your garden and don't compromise your values. Don't let in hard times, it's easy to get your values compromised. Don't let that happen. I want to thank everybody for their insights. I know this isn't an easy subject, but we're not in easy times right now. But trying to stay positive as best we possibly can, and if we need each other, all of it, and it goes out to the listening audience. Do something that's positive, even if it's walking your dog, because they have a unique perspective on putting things in perspective. So with that, thanks to everybody, and everybody, keep health chatting away.